Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. Just before we start the show, my stand-up comedy show, Brand New Hour, at Soho Theatre, runs from the 30th of November to the 5th of December. There's hardly any tickets left, so go to sohotheatre.com and grab one while you can. I really love you to be there. Also, we're recording a live episode of The Guilty Feminist at Shakespeare's Globe, but the lovely indoor winter space, as part of their Women and Power season, 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 12th of December. And our guest is Kathy Lett, the legend. Now, I'm very excited to tell you about this. Sunday, the 16th of December, starting at 7 p.m., not 7:30, The Guilty Feminist presents Camp as Christmas. It will be at the Union Chapel in Islington. I will be co-hosting with Tom Allen himself. Our brilliant lineup of confirmed LGBTQ plus acts include Sandy Toksvig, the Queen, Grace Petrie, Jess Fostercue, Jen Brister. There are other brilliant acts too, but there are some so big and exciting, I am not even allowed to announce them yet. All I will say is tickets are going to go soon. Get one now. It's a benefit for Say It Loud, run by and for LGBTQ plus refugees fleeing homophobic violence. And Can Do, Dr. Rola Hammond, who you heard on the podcast recently, Alarming Syrian Schools. Tickets are £25 or £15 concession. It is the most extraordinary lineup, and it will be the best Christmas show this year. For all of these, check the links in the show notes or go to guiltyfeminist.com. And finally, we released a few days ago a podcast version of a live stream we did with Sarah Mardini and Sean Binder, who were two search and rescue volunteers who are facing trial this week for trumped up charges of trafficking in Greece. They're humanitarians. We need to support them. We need to tweet the Greek Prime Minister and tell him we will not stand for it. Please go to freehumanitarians.org. All of the information about how you can support Sarah and Sean and the others who are up on these ridiculous charges will be there. Plus, you can donate to help their campaign. This is really, really urgent and scary. So please help if you can in any way possible. And now the podcast. I'm a feminist, but at my dance studio this week, I went upstairs to use the loo and I walked past an open door and there was a man sitting on the floor with a circle of young teenagers and young women around him, and he was teaching ballet. I was watching a man teach ballet, and oh my God, it was a man, and he had the energy of a straight man. I don't know if he was a straight man, but I think he was a straight man. He was teaching girls and young women ballet.
So what was the bit that you loved the most? Was it that it was a man teaching a traditionally feminine art form perhaps to girls, or the fact that he was very bendy?
It's beyond language. It's above language. There isn't any way to articulate it. It's a feeling in my soul and my loins.
Is it like you've gone for a walk outside and then you've just accidentally found a swan and some cygnets and you've just become transfixed the swan?
It's beyond language and it's beyond nature. There's no natural equivalent or metaphor for this, Cal. He was demonstrating things to them. He stood up and was demonstrating things to them, and they were all looking up at him adoringly. It was the ballet. It was the man. It was the teaching role. It was the status gap. And none of this is feminist. Like, all of this is very unfeminist. Like, why? I see women teaching ballet in there all the time, and I'm like, yeah, it's a ballet class. I don't think anything of it. It was just very sexy watching a straight man, I assume, teaching ballet.
What I'm loving here is that you were talking about it the way I talked about seeing whales when I came back from whale watching. Like, it was just so majestic. We didn't know if we were going to see one. It was just so beautiful. It was felt slightly dangerous. Yeah. You know, what if he'd fallen and crushed you? Did you end up surreptitiously creeping into the class and joining the circle?
It felt very inappropriate because they were all 17-year-old ballet dancers, so no. If I could have slipped in unnoticed in my leggings and T-shirt, sure, but these were 17-year-old girls in leotards with the figures of ballet dancers, so I would have been extremely off. It would have been like Stonehenge wandering in and thinking, maybe no one will notice me. No, obviously not.
Also, you would have just made it into the circle and then you have to put your hand up and go, can I go to the toilet, please?
Yes, that's the other thing, because I was on
probably
my way to the loo.
Probably just as well you didn't go in.
But can I say, on the plus side for me, that's the I'm a feminist butt side. I was like, oh, the whale watching feeling. And you did find a metaphor in nature. You did. You absolutely
did
find it. Thank you. Well done. I thought you wouldn't, but you did.
Good work shopping, everyone.
Never underestimate Cal Wilson. She had another go. She thought, you can't tell me I can't. I'm a feminist. And she had another go and she nailed it in one. It was whale watching, although just in spirit. But on the way back, and this is in the plus box for my feminism, I didn't look. I was so tempted to just look again. And I thought, this has nothing to do with you. It's not, why is this hot for you? And it's because I always fancied my teachers when I was a teenager, my male teachers, possibly some of my female teachers, but my memory of crushes is male teachers, never boys at school, always teachers. And you know how you really crush hard at that age? You know, you because your hormones are going crazy.
Wow. It must have been like a miasma of hormones in that room. It must have been like a light fog just filling that room.
Well, I think maybe that's what I could feel. I caught their hormones, their teenage hormones. So they were sort of 16 and 17. He was this handsome, I don't know if he was straight, but he had a straight energy. What does that mean, Deborah? What does that mean? I'm a feminist, but what the fuck does that mean? But you know what I mean. This is me judging a man as being somehow straight. I can somehow detect unbelievable behavior on my part. But that's why we have the confessional, I'm a feminist, but this isn't for the more noble parts of us. This is the ignoble session. I assessed that he was straight from a doorway and assessed the feels of the girls. Not that you can't have a crush on a gay man by any means. Got crushes on loads of gay men.
I've done it several times.
Oh, all the time. It's a lovely safe crush, a crush on a gay man. Nothing about this felt safe. Nothing about this felt safe. This all felt very dangerous. I caught their hormones, which they may or may not have even had. And also I just had a sort of flashback to feeling something that intensely. Because as you get older, you feel everything less, I think, mostly. My feelings are much less deep than they were. As a child, I felt things so deeply. As an adolescent, I think felt things very deeply. Every decade since, it's been much more. I've taken off a layer of skin, basically. I've had a layer of skin soldered off by life.
Do you think that's why people that get celebrated in the paper for being 100 or 101 are always so serene? Like they've just stopped feeling anything about anything and they're just like,
probably.
All that I care about is cake. That's all I care about. Mm. Well, and trying to think up their proverb to tell everyone about how to live a long life.
Yes, yes. They're probably thinking, oh, should I say making daisy chains or walking barefoot in the grass? What a load of bollocks. But I've got to say something like that. I've read it. I know that's what the kids are expecting, something like, you know, connection, love. It's the only thing that matters. But for whatever reason, it was sort of like a kick in the stomach back to those old hormones.
See, I want to be particularly unfeminist now and ask you what he was wearing.
He was wearing like ballet men's leggings and like a tank top. But he had a ballet dancer's body, obviously. Not obviously, actually. Teachers don't always, but he did. He looked like a masterclass.
I feel that we have spent more time discussing this than it actually took for it to happen.
Oh, not much longer. Oh, it was seconds.
It's the MASH version of, like, I think the Korean War finished far sooner than MASH did as a series.
Yeah, years earlier.
I'm a feminist, but the reason I really like wearing a mask isn't just because it's us taking care of each other when we go out. Mm-hmm. It isn't just that it's a signal to other people that I'm thinking of them as well as myself. The reason I really like wearing a mask is I haven't had to pluck my chin for 18 months.
What do you not do it for yourself / your husband / your child?
Actually, this is the thing, right? I find myself just it looks like I'm concentrating, but really I'm just doing a sweep of my chin, just going. Yeah, I've got four on one side, three on the other.
I have two there under here that I do fiddle with and try and pull out. And then I have one now that's quite new that's there. But this one is very loose. It comes out very quickly.
I'm like a chin farmer. I'm like, well, these two aren't ready, but I can harvest this crop. Like I can get the left side if I can't get the right side.
Oh, God.
And I have a favourite bristle. I don't know whether you have a favourite bristle, Deborah, but no. I have a favourite bristle. And I also, very foolishly, my husband asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And very foolishly, I said I'd like one of those light up magnifying mirrors. What a mistake. What a mistake.
Oh, no.
I thought I had six chin hairs. I've got a thousand. And that is why I love masks.
Are they very light ones though that you can't really see?
No, they're the coarse ones. They're the, you know, the ones that you could use as a toothpick. Like they're kind of strong and long and black and coarse.
There's no reason why women shouldn't have body hair. We're allowed it. Men have it. Why aren't we allowed it? I don't understand why we have to constantly be smoothing ourselves all the time. I mean, I do it because I've been raised in a patriarchy and so I prefer it. It's not my fault. That's my taste has been formed by power structures and now it is my taste. What am I meant to do? Like something I don't like? You can't like something you don't like. I guess I could train myself to like it by staying with it. Blah, 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 blah. It's quicker just to pull it out.
Yeah. And for me, it's just that I fiddle with them. It's the same reason I don't paint my fingernails because I just pick. So if I left the hairs there, I'd be naming them. You know, I'd be like, oh, that one's Susan. This one's Angela. Like, I've got to get rid of them for my own concentration.
In Orange is the New Black, Piper has one that she says she and her boyfriend used to call Spike. Naming them, you know, is not the way forward. I'm a feminist, but the other day I had to get a taxi because of a previous engagement to an abortion protest for Texas, where I was speaking. And I told the taxi driver when he got me there on time to speak that he was a feminist hero and he should tell everyone that he was a feminist hero, his friends and his family, because he had got me there by going, black cab drivers, they know the way in London, by going a tricky back route against all the odds. He got me there 10 minutes faster than Waze said he would. And I said, you have to tell everyone, sir, you're a feminist hero. And I said that even though when he'd said to me, where are you going? And I said to an abortion march, he said, huh, sad business, ladies' choice. Sad business, ladies' choice. And can I add to that? Mandy Reid is a feminist who is the head of the Women's Equality Party. But when I told her that, she went, it's not the worst summation I've ever heard. She said, I've heard worse from men. Sad business, ladies' choice.
It's a good T-shirt slogan.
As she said, it's a bit reductive. And, you know, there are various things with that. It doesn't include lots of different nuances. But it was such, it was his like four-line summation. Bless him.
Brilliant.
But even though his summation was extremely reductive, and I won't be wearing his T-shirt. I told him, sir, you're a feminist hero. He said, oh, I don't know about that. I said, I do. You have to tell your friends and family you're a feminist hero. You got me here on time. He was very pleased.
I wonder if he told the next person that got into the taxi. Like, I wonder what the next conversation was like. It was, I don't know whether you know this, but I'm a feminist superhero.
Yeah. Well, last night I got in a cab really late. And as soon as I got in and we drove away from the house, this taxi driver just went, I was just talking to someone about the serial killer around here. And I went, what? And he went, yeah, back in the early 2000s. There was a man who went around here killing lots of people, old people, and then told me horrific stories. And he was like,
oh.
And I was like, uh-huh, why are you telling me this? But he hadn't said anything else. Hadn't said, are you having a good night or da-da-da-da or anything. That was his opening gambit.
Wow.
And I was like, uh-huh. And he was like, yeah, he wants to get out now. He's up for parole. I don't think they'll let him out. Do you think they'll let him out? I was like, I'm not really sure. Oh, I've just got to do this quick email. I was so nervous. But he was just
awful.
Like, yeah, it's all around these streets. He used to go in and he used to kill people and do things to them and started telling me stories that I won't share on the podcast because it's triggering. But I was like, holy hell. I was like, why would you start? Why do you think this is a good subject for conversation when you've got a woman alone in your cab? I was like, no.
It does sound like the start of a horror movie, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's, you know, I was on a night like this 20 years ago. Like, it's totally that. Now, this is not a planned I'm a feminist but I'm just going to say it. I'm a feminist, but as excited as I was to do this Guilty Feminist on Zoom, the thing that I have loved the most so far is Tom Selinsky's sneaking behind you to put the cat out. And hearing the cat meowing and going, oh, nothing beats someone's cat walking across a keyboard in a Zoom meeting. Nothing.
No, I mean, it's great. But the thing is, when Tom locks the cats out, they cry at the door, and then I get so easily distracted by that that I can't think and talk, so I have to let them in. I can't. I just can't.
You're going to have to get cat flaps on your interior doors as well.
I mean, that would be the dream, but then what's the point of having doors? There's only cats in this house. I mean, the humans can open the doors. I am a feminist, but at the Texas abortion rally, it started to rain. And I said to my friend, I mean, I've just had a blow dry and I've got no umbrella, so my hair's going to get wet, but no one cares about that. No, where's my protest? I mean, it was freshly blow dried, Cal. Freshly blow dried. I can't. Can you imagine if you've just literally had a break, because I had another appointment that morning and that's why I had to be taxied there for the earlier appointment. I didn't, and I want this on the record, I didn't get a blow dry for a protest.
Right. I didn't. But also, if you said I got a blow dry for a protest, I would go, that's on brand. Like, I would accept that as an answer.
It is on brand, and I might have, but I didn't. I got a blow dry for the previous appointment that was a thing I had to do that required good hair. The cat is now trying to get back in and I can't handle it. Toast, come in. Come in or go out. She likes the door open. She likes the option.
I found myself uttering the sentence today, hang on, I've just got to charge the cat's fish. Have you got a USB charger?
What?
I got it like a wiggling fish and it's got a USB charger so that it doesn't run out of wiggle.
Oh, we need one of those.
It's quite a weird, like a sentence that would make, all the words are in English, but if you'd say that to someone 20 years ago, they would be like, I don't understand what you're talking about.
5 years ago, really. 5 years ago. Someone said recently, can I plug in my book? No, I'm charging my cigarette. and like saying like the future is so weird, because 5 years ago we wouldn't have understood that, or when however long ago we wouldn't have understood that 10 years ago. Can I plug in my book? No, I'm charging my cigarette.
Amazing. I'm a feminist, but while I was incredibly excited to be doing an episode of The Guilty Feminist with you, secretly, I just want to talk about your magnetic eyelashes.
Oh, yeah. Lola's Lashes.
I mean, you've talked about them on the podcast before, so we probably don't need to talk about them. But afterwards, I need to hear everything again.
They're the new pegs, Cal.
Do you know, the thing that I get the most on Instagram or Twitter is just people going, have you tried these? And then sending me a link to pegs. And I'm not angry about it.
No, you shouldn't be.
Makes me very happy.
If you're listening and you haven't, you were not listening at the point when we were doing shows in Australia and Cal had a running joke. It wasn't even a joke. It was
It was just a statement. It was a statement that my secret side quest of my life is to find the perfect peg.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it were a joke. It was very funny, but it was authentic that Cal was looking for the perfect peg. And then didn't you get Julia Gillard involved with the perfect peg?
Yes, she agreed with me. She agreed that it is a noble side quest to have. And then by the time we got to New Zealand, people were bringing pegs to gigs to give me.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, how exciting. You get food, you get beautiful cupcakes with suffragettes on them, and I get pegs. And
that's true. Very happy about it. I get cakes, I get books, I get tote bags with vaginas stitched on the side in embroidery. I get posters, I get fan art, like, you know, pictures of beautiful feminist imagery, sometimes pictures of me. I've never once got a peg, but Lola's Lashes are the new pegs for sure, in as much as I'm obsessed with them. But, you know, I found one, I think I might have said this on the Guilty Feminist the other day, but I found one on my door latch.
Yes.
But it's the door, it's the front door of the whole building. And there was one of my magnetic lashes. And I was like, maybe one of my neighbors found it and stuck it on there so I would see it. I don't know. They probably know she's the magnetic lash lady. They probably do.
So two things I love about that. One, that you said door latch, very similar to door lash. Just a marketing opportunity there.
Lola's latches. Yes, absolutely.
Also, maybe they just thought it was a caterpillar. You know, like if it was in Australia, someone would go, oh, it's just one of those caterpillars, like little hairy thing on the door.
We have fewer insect crawlies, things that want to bite you here. Toast wants to go out now. Bloody hell. Okay, I'm just going to leave the door open because I can't handle it. So that light's going to come in now. Hold on. I'm going to put the light out.
When we return to live gigs, do you think, because I feel like now that we've done lots of things online, we're kind of learning the aspects that we want to take back with us into society. Do you think it will become acceptable just to have your cats at live gigs and just have them wandering in and out?
Yeah, I hope so, because I think they have added overall. People love seeing cats. If I'm on a business meeting, you know, write about a script or something, if your cat comes into the frame, everyone's like, oh my God. Like, you know, there's nothing that will break the ice or make it a more human call if it's a bit, oh, hello, never met. If a cat comes into frame, suddenly everyone's just entranced and just becomes really soft and open. So I do think taking cats to meetings would be good.
We've started doing pet parades. A couple of friends and I, if we do corporate gigs, we have a pet parade on Zoom.
That's so nice.
Everyone has a moment to hold up their cat or their dog or their snake or their lizard or whatever they've got.
If they snake or lizard? No.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to see that.
Lizards. No, we've had them.
I'd ban those. I'd be very upset by them. I couldn't handle it. I'd be like, oh, it's going to come through the Zoom.
Pet judgment. Did not expect this.
I'm a feminist, but I will judge your pets if they're reptilian. I'm sorry. I am going to. I don't think a lizard is a reptile, though, is it?
Yes.
Is it? Is it?
Yes.
Or is it?
What else would it be?
I don't know. I just suddenly had a crisis of confidence that I had misspecied.
There's going to be some really angry geckos. We're going to get
writing in
emails from skinks. It's all over.
From a variety of bedrooms and kitchens via Zoom, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Cal Wilson, and our very special guests, Rochelle Panitz and April Elaine Horton, talking about checking in with our bodies. Woo! This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is Cal Wilson, and we are talking about checking in with our bodies. Cal, how often do you check in with your body?
I reckon every time I get out of the shower, I look at myself and take stock. But I don't know whether that's the same as checking in with my body. I think what I'm checking in with my body the most about at the moment is my right knee has started to ache for no reason. And I keep thinking about it and going, is this the beginning of the end? Like, am I about to hit that age where suddenly it all goes?
Is this your personal bodygeddon?
Yes, yes.
Where you're just like, yeah, this is the last days now. Yeah. I suspect not. I think with pains, because I've been doing a lot of exercise over the last 18 months of lockdown or however long it's been now, different parts of my body take the strain. So I used
to have
a really, really painful piriformis, which I mostly cured with yoga. Then with dance, I had to stretch my leg in a certain way to stop the pain in my sacrum. And then the pain went to my upper knee, above my knee, the muscle above my knee. At the moment, I've got an Achilles heel. I wake up in the morning and as I go down the steps, it's like, oh. But I think often the part of the body taking the strain is taking the strain off something else that's tight.
Mm.
And it's got to go somewhere if you're doing a lot of exercise. It's got to go somewhere. And if you're not doing a lot of exercise, it's got to go somewhere. Because whether you're moving it, whether you're not moving it, it hurts because you're moving it. It hurts because you're not moving it. Whatever you do, there's going to be a certain amount of pain. And that is just the case if you're not 11 years of age.
Yes, yes. It does amaze me how things that used to be effortless are effortful now. And just, you know, like I was always very adamant when I was younger that I could carry anything and I could lift heavy stuff. And I was always really like, no, I'm fine. I can move this chest of drawers on my own. And now I've gone, actually, you know what? I can't do that anymore. As much as it annoys me, could you carry that heavy box? Because I'm just going, I'm just not as strong as I used to be, which, you know, is also me not doing stuff to make myself that strong. But I'm just aware of aging and getting puffed and stuff. And I did lots of running over our first lockdown last year, and I have never run before, but really started to enjoy it in a weird way. It was a good time to listen to podcasts, I found. Mm-hmm. So I ran heaps, and then I went back to New Zealand because my mum was ill. And then when I came back, I just lost all my fitness. And I felt like I exercised to a level of fitness over the first lockdown, and then I just exercised out of it. So I kind of like I went backwards in fitness. And that's a really bizarre thing to get my head around as well, of going, well, I could do that 6 months ago.
Do you know what, though? This is true of fitness. If you have got yourself that fit before, it's a much quicker journey back. Your body remembers. I gain and lose fitness so quickly. Like, I can get a cold and then get my period and think, oh, and actually I don't want to be huffing and puffing and running around. And in 2 weeks, I'm like, oh, well, I've lost all my fitness. I get back on the Peloton and the Peloton is numbers. It's like you can do this resistance. So I can absolutely see my fitness change. And I'm like, oh, this is so frustrating. I've slipped back. But then quickly I can get back to where I was. Personal trainers have told me it's science. Even if 10 years ago you were running frequently, when you come back to it, your body remembers. It goes, oh, we've done this before. So every time you get fit is not a waste. Your body remembers it.
I like that. I like that. And my body remembers it, goes, oh, are we doing this again, are we?
Like, it's exactly what it does. Because I'm not someone who's ever maintained fitness in my life. The longest I've maintained a proper relationship with moving my body and exercising and cardio has been in the last couple of years because of the whole lockdown situation. Mm. It's the longest I've ever done. I am pretty fit at the moment, I notice. If I have to run upstairs at a train station or something, I'm like, oh, I can run up the stairs, carry my suitcase, jump on the train and not really be out of breath. And it's great.
That's good.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Even thinking about that, I feel a little bit puffed. Just you saying that sentence makes me go, oh, I probably have to stop halfway up just for a little rest.
Oh, I need to sit down now. Yeah, just even telling that story. but also I'm aware it's a privilege that I've been able to get fit in lockdown. And it's a privilege that my body moves in the way I ask it to. I mean, not really in the way I ask it to. I would ask a lot more of it, but I'm asking reasonable amounts of it. But do you know something my dance teacher can do that I'm so envious of? She squats down to get something or to take a video of me or something like that. And then she just stands up without putting her hands on the ground. So she can, from a squat, just stand. She does lots of capoeira and lots of training. And that's what I want to do. I want to be able to just squat and stand and squat and stand. And I'm so jealous of how elegantly she does it. And it is my mission now. And I don't really know how to. I've said to her, I want to learn how to do that. I guess I might have to do it with my back against a wall for a while.
Yeah,
Build my core strength more, do more sit-ups. I don't know.
What my immediate thought with you saying she's able to squat down and then stand up, I bet she doesn't go either. I bet she just stands up noiselessly.
She is in her early 30s and makes no old lady noises at all when she stands up. Yeah. And she's been a dancer since she was a small child. Like, she can't even remember a time before dance, and it's her full-time career. So yeah, her body is a machine. But I want a little bit of that, because a yoga teacher once told me that if you are lying down and can stand up without using your hands, just sort of, I guess, using the momentum of the rock to get up on your feet, that's a great indicator of longevity and fitness into your old age. So your flexibility, your strength, you know, because we can allow our bones to ossify. We can allow our strength to go, all of those things. At a certain age, it's use it or lose it. And again, I speak from a place of privilege. I do not have a disability. But if you do have the privilege of a body that you can strengthen, I sort of feel an obligation to myself and feminism to strengthen it if I can. If I've got, again, the luxury of the time, I don't have any children, things like that. I'm aware there's plenty of people with children who are much fitter than me. I don't mean that, but I just mean if there's time available and bandwidth available, I should do it.
I had this revelation about myself when I went to the Fringe Festival in Adelaide last year, in a glorious time when there was no lockdown. Every time I see like a circus show or a burlesque show, I'm left at the end of it going, is it too late to get bendy? Because I look at people using their bodies in this fantastic way, and I go, oh, I reckon, could I fit myself in a box like that contortionist? Like, it's the thing that I aspire to do that I've never got around to doing.
Flexibility.
I've also realized that the biggest compliments, or the compliments that I receive as being the most valuable, are from bendy people. So like, if a circus performer that I've just watched fold themselves into a handbag and set themselves on fire and fly around the tent, you know, someone who's done something extraordinary physical, when they give me a compliment, I'm like, oh my God, a physical person that knows how to be physical. Like, it's just this weird thing I think I have, because it seems so far out of my reach to be, you know, to fly around on a hoop or fall down some silks or, you know, that kind of thing. Not to say I don't love compliments from everybody, but I think it's because they do something that I cannot imagine doing when they like what I do, which is just standing and chatting. It kind of goes in more. It's like, it's like being noticed by the circus or something. It's such
a
childlike
that.
Response.
So Cal Wilson's new pegs is compliments from bendy people. So if you were listening to this and you are in the circus, if you're somebody who can climb a silk rope or something like that, if you wouldn't mind tweeting Cal Wilson, at Cal Wilson. Is it at Calbo, isn't it?
At Calbo on Twitter, at Calbo Wilson on Instagram. That's not to say that I don't value compliments from everyone, but it is just...
If you are going to compliment Cal, could you just at least pretend to be someone who can fit yourself into a suitcase? Just for her own psyche. It's a very specific fetish that she has.
Don't kink shame me, Deborah.
No, I do know what you mean, because I think the same. I sort of think, what we do is chat or manipulating words for stand-up.
Yes.
And is it really a thing? But of course, if you can't do that, if you're good physically, but you're not somebody who's intuitively verbal or intuitively comedic, you think that's a genius skill. Like, what, you know, the grass is always greener. Yes. And anything that comes to you naturally, you tend not to rate as much. You go,
that's true.
You know. So I think what you do is brilliant and a skill, and I would absolutely still admire it even if I could do the trapeze.
I used to, when I was changing my son's nappy when he was a baby, in the effortless way he would put his feet in his mouth, like, I would go, when do you lose that? When do you lose that ability? Like, if only, not that I have much call for putting my feet in my mouth unless it's metaphorically.
Yeah. But did you love a compliment from your son when he could put his feet in his mouth?
I couldn't really make it out because there was a lot of toes. It was more mumbling. It was quite hard to understand. But
you knew he was thinking it. Cal, I'm going to ask you something else about checking of your body. How often do you check your breasts to see if there are any lumps?
I do it quite a lot because I have a lot of breast cancer in my family. So my grandmother and my maternal aunt and my mum have all had breast cancer. And I have a thing called, is it fibroedema? I'm not sure. I have cysts in my breasts. So I go and get a mammogram every year or 2 years because they're known as breast mice, which is a weird term.
Really?
Yeah. So I think it's because they're small and they're quite hard to feel and they move around. They're quite hard to kind of locate and you can only get rid of them if you give them cheese. I think that's why they're called breast mice. But so I do a regular check because of that history in my family and also, yeah, having found a lump before, I keep an eye on things. And it's so weird, getting a mammogram isn't the most pleasant thing in the world. Like I have described it as being, it's like you're running for a lift and not all of you made it in.
Oh, wow.
Like it's sort of, and it's for people with larger breasts, I think it's not as painful because I have quite small boobs. It's quite hard to get enough of them on the, in between the plates.
Mm.
But it's really important obviously to do. And it's also, it's such a strange thing to do. Like, and if you have, I've had ultrasounds done as well. And it's kind of like someone, they've got a detachable shower head and they're just kind of ironing your breasts to find out what's going on. It's such, it's all quite odd, but it's so important.
Hello, Goody Feminists. It's Jessica Regan here, and I am delighted to be announcing our Big Speeches Winter Workshops. They are taking place on Saturday, November 27th, Sunday, November 28th, Saturday, December 11th, Sunday, December 12th, Saturday, January 15th, and Sunday, January 16th. All Saturday workshops are taking place from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. and all Sunday workshops are taking place from 3 to 7 p.m. So hopefully, whatever part of the world you're in, there's a time slot there that suits you. We are keeping the workshops online as that makes them as accessible and inclusive as possible, and we're all about that at The Guilty Feminist. So please go to guiltyfeminist.com/big speeches to secure your place, or indeed, this could be a Christmas present for someone that you think might need a confidence boost. New year, new you, whatever your motivations, we will be delighted to see you there. Places do book out fast, so act now to avoid disappointment. And of course, as always, there are heavily subsidized places available.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Well, that leads us to our first guest today. Our first guest today received a breast cancer diagnosis at the age of 32 and founded So Brave to help young women of Australia to be educated, empowered, and hashtag breast aware. Please welcome Rochelle Panitz. Rochelle, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hi, everyone.
So, Rochelle, Tell us about So Brave. Why is it called So Brave?
Okay, well, it wasn't called So Brave. It was called the Young Women's Breast Cancer Fundraiser Project. And we were talking to media and they would say, hang on a sec, what was that? And so a friend of mine said, look, you really need to think of a decent, catchy name for this thing that you're doing. And so I couldn't think of one. We came up with a bunch of ideas, but nothing felt quite right. So with most things with the project, I put it out there into the universe and I said, right, okay, I'll go to sleep now and you'll tell me what it's going to be. So I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and all I could hear was this word, brave, 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 brave. And I thought, if I don't put it in my phone, I'm going to forget it. So I put it in and I just did an acronymic sort of poem kind of thing with it. B, breast cancer. R, research. A, advocacy and awareness. V, voices. And E, empowerment. And so I shut my phone, went back to bed, woke up the next morning, madly looking at all the domains to see what's available. Of course, Brave already taken across everything. So I was trying to spitball, okay, what do we call? Lots of people saying, oh, what about Be Brave? And I said, oh, it's a bit too passive. It doesn't really encompass everything that we're trying to talk about. And I remembered a lady from my community when I was going through my treatment, and I used to wear wigs because I lost all my hair through chemotherapy. And she was always very well dressed, always looked immaculate, wouldn't go outside of the house without her hair perfectly set. And I was turning up without my wig because it's too hot, and my hair looked, well, like a chemo patient, bald and a bit wispy with hairs everywhere. And I remember her coming up to me and saying, you are so brave. And at the time I was like, no, I'm not brave. This is just me getting through it, trying to like live so I can be here for my family. But yeah, I think that So Brave story, every single cancer patient can relate to. But also these women, they are really, really brave. You know, they've been through the trauma of a breast cancer diagnosis and then they front up to get body painted and then have photo shoots in like public areas so that we can put it in a calendar so they can share their story and raise awareness. So it kind of started off as a bit of a like roundabout route to getting to where we were, but it really makes a lot of sense for who we are and what we're trying to achieve with young women.
Great. So it's partly what's imposed upon you of, oh, you're so brave, but it's partly the ownership of the bravery it takes, not just to experience it, but to advocate for it. How did you feel when you first got that diagnosis? What was that experience like?
So to start with, my diagnosis wasn't simple. Breast cancer in the majority of women is found in your 50s or 60s. But for about 5% of women in Australia, they will be aged under 40 years old. In Australia, we also have a breast screening, which is free for anyone aged 50 to 74, and anyone from 40 can access it. Anybody in the 20s and 30s is considered low risk. But something I found out after I started So Brave is actually that breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer in women aged 20 to 39. So this kind of misperception of breast cancer being this older woman's disease needs to kind of have that cultural shift. And it was definitely my experience when I was going through my diagnosis. I was pregnant with my second child in my third trimester, and I was in bed this one night and I remembered seeing a breast check card hanging up in my wardrobe. And it just reminded me, oh, I haven't done that in a little while. I'm going to do that. And when I did, I noticed this pea-sized hard lump in my right breast, on the right side of my right breast. And I turned to my husband. I said, can you feel this? It doesn't feel right. I don't remember feeling it before. And he said, look, you know, let's bring it up with our obstetrician at the next appointment, because I was seeing her every couple of weeks by that point. And when I spoke to her, she wasn't very concerned. She said, yeah, I can feel it. I'll make a note in your record, but we won't do anything until after the baby's born. It's probably just fibrous tissue, your body getting ready for your baby. So I didn't really think all that much about it following that. And then when my son was born, I remembered breastfeeding him and feeling this lump, thinking that it actually, I felt, had gotten bigger. So I went back to my obstetrician on the phone, and this was before Christmas. So she's in sort of trying to, you know, minimize all of her consults because she's, you know, trying to shut down for Christmas, and wouldn't answer the phone. It was actually her receptionist who told me that if I was really worried about this thing, to go see my general practitioner. So GP's the first line of defense here in Australia. So I went and saw my GP. My GP referred me to get an ultrasound. At that ultrasound, the sonographer tried looking for it, couldn't find it, sent me out to the waiting room. And then another person from their team came and told me in front of everybody in the waiting room that it was nothing, just normal lactating tissue, nothing to worry about. And I remember saying to her, as I was sort of running towards her to try and keep her a bit quiet, was, well, I'm worried about this. Like, when shall I come back? She said, oh, look, 6 months. And I said, but what if I feel like it's different? She said, well, come back earlier. And kind of really dismissed me a lot with like my concerns and how I was feeling. Anyway, so I went home to my mother and I said to her, she's a nurse. Most of my mum and her sisters are nurses. And I said, you know, where do you go get your mammograms these days? And, you know, so she sent me off to the place where she was getting her mammograms and ultrasounds. And it just so happened that that second opinion and going and getting that second ultrasound, which then became within the space of that 1 hour, an ultrasound, a single side mammogram and a punch biopsy, that I was diagnosed. Because had I not sort of complained about it and followed it up and then pushed through, then I wouldn't have gotten my diagnosis, because everybody kept saying, you have no family history, you're young, you're breastfeeding, you don't fit any of our risk categories, we don't think this is breast cancer, until it was. And then
call for you to have to make to advocate for yourself like that, because every step of the way you've been dismissed.
Mm-hmm, 100%. And that's why after going through my own treatment, and intense treatment for me was 2 fairly invasive surgeries, 6 full-on months of very highly cytotoxic chemotherapy, and then 7 weeks of radiotherapy, 12 months of immunotherapy, and then I've been on hormone therapy since, gosh, the end of that year, so nearly 7 years. The onus is on young women to know their bodies, to go to their GP and advocate that their GP is going to do something to follow up, then advocate to the sonographers and the radiologists so that they will follow up, and then also that they will do their own follow-up with the doctors. So if you've gotten a benign test, like you were saying, fibroadenoma, I would 100% tell you, you need to be on some kind of schedule to be checking your breasts on a much more regular basis now that you've already had something that's benign. Yeah, that's great. And that's what we wish for all young women. We wish for them to go in and be a hypochondriac and say, look, I found this thing, I'm not sure what it is, get it checked out, and it to be nothing. Rather than somebody who thinks, oh, I'm too young, I don't have a family history, I'm being told it's nothing, and then them end up getting a stage 4 terminal diagnosis. Because in Australia, we have excellent rates of survival for women who have been diagnosed in stage 1, 2, and 3. But for women across the world who get a stage 4 diagnosis, where in terms of stages, just so people understand what that means, breast cancer in stages 1, 2, and 3 hasn't really spread beyond the breast tissue and into the armpits. But if it's gone to stage 4, it means it's metastasized. It's gone to somewhere else in your body. So your bones, your liver, your brain, somewhere else in your body. And it's not curable when it gets to that stage. So what we're trying to do is make young women aware of breast cancer risk, and also to empower them to speak up for their own health, so that if there's something not right. And so as So Brave has gone, we've been working with young women across the country who are all diagnosed under 40. We do these really empowering body painting exercises with them, and then we create a national calendar each year. But as we've morphed and as we've grown, become our own charity, we've also then moved into that young women's education focus, because young women need to know this. They need to know these skills so that they're carrying them through their whole life, because if they don't get diagnosed in their 20s or 30s, then the likelihood is that they might get diagnosed in their 40s, 50s, 60s or 70s, or even into their 80s. And they need to be able to be breast aware throughout their life so that when they're finding something abnormal, they can advocate. And with young women too, it's about removing some of that stigma and the taboo around breasts. You know, for a lot of young women, they've only just started developing and it's all a bit unknown and, oh my God, what is this thing and how does it work? And so trying to remove some of that taboo around even talking about breast health or body health in any way, and trying to get them to realize that this is just a normal part of being a woman. You know, women across the world have boobs and we all need to know what they feel like so that we can advocate on our best behalf, because unfortunately breast cancer is worldwide the most commonly diagnosed cancer in women.
Mm-hmm.
And while it has excellent, you know, outcomes for some, unfortunately it still kills people. So we mm-hmm. need to be vigilant.
All of this is absolutely amazing, Rochelle. I think it's so brilliant what you're doing. I'm quite shocked it took you so many times advocating for yourself. I think I'd be someone who'd go, oh, thank goodness, they've just said it's nothing, it's fine. And I'd go away. And so it's really important that I've heard this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard this, to not just go, great news, bye. If you get that feeling, you have to keep pushing. I felt a lump once and I went in and it got tested and it was fine, but it was really good to know. A friend of mine went in to the GP and said, I found this lump in my breast. And the doctor went, it was a male doctor, and so he said, oh, how did you find it? Like he was disgusted that she'd been touching her own breasts. And she said, my boyfriend found it because she saw that his response was, oh, isn't that awful? Isn't that awful? This was some time ago, but it's really awful. And so sometimes you really do, and I know there's millions of absolutely brilliant GPs out there working incredibly hard, but sometimes you do have to push past those attitudes, or as you say, busy people, you know, who are seeing lots of people, NHS overstretched, public health service in Australia overstretched. You have to speak up for yourself. It does make me wonder, if English is not your first language and you're in an English language country, if you're someone who's from a marginalized group, who's always told to go away, the whole thing about women not being believed in their symptoms, which we know is a phenomenon, you really do. And if you know anyone in your life or you advocate for anyone in your life to be pushy and to say, I need it to be seen again, I need a second opinion, I need a third opinion. If you get that sense, as you say, better to be told, yes, we've done an absolute check now, we've seen the mammogram, it's absolutely nothing, and to go away reassured than to live with that worry, because anxiety in itself can affect your health. And with breast cancer, this is for women, non-binary people with breasts, trans men, but also cis men can get breast cancer too. And so, yeah. You know, listen to your body, whoever you are.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess when we go into schools, we talk about body health as well as breast health, because it could be something else. It could be that they've got some kind of gynecological issue. You know, in Australia as well, we have a huge amount of women who get endometriosis that gets left undiagnosed and untreated for years because people think that it's just a painful period and they don't ever get diagnosed properly. So I think what we're trying to really see in the next sort of generation is a group of people who are pushing for health for themselves and for the best health that they can possibly have. And some of that is taking ownership of the fact that, as you said, we've got humans who are the doctors, and humans make mistakes. So if they're busy and they maybe don't do a full history of you, then you need to know all of those things so you can say, well, look, I know my body, this isn't right, I want it investigated. And if they don't believe you or don't agree with you, go see somebody else, like you said, get that second, third, or however many opinions you need to get. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Check in with your body and then check in with your medical professionals, and don't take no for an answer if you're feeling that something's wrong. Just do make sure you get that second opinion.
What's the response been like? Like you're talking about working in schools, like what have you, yes. How have people responded to it?
Yeah. So when we go out to schools, we ask them to do a bit of a feedback form. At one of our most recent schools, 84% of the girls there, and they were 15 or 16 year old, all the girls in that year group, they all said that they felt more confident about their breasts and breast health following our seminar. So I think It's probably something that needs to be incorporated as part of health studies anyway, but, you know, schools themselves are quite busy, so it doesn't always make, you know, the cut. But I think if young women hear the message and we push it out through our social media, we try and go out to as many schools and universities as we can. We've got partnerships with universities and schools. But if we can try and get that message canvassed out amongst the young women, then this won't be something that's a shock. When we say something like young women get breast cancer too, they'll be like, of course young women get breast cancer too, because you're a woman. It affects anybody. And as you were saying before, you know, men do get breast cancer, not in the same numbers and the same rates, but, you know, men need to be aware of their own body and their own health as well, and to go and get those diagnoses and those tests as soon as possible. In terms of how our imagery and our beautiful artwork and our videos is received, people are always like completely overwhelmed by these women that have like not only gone through, you know, the complete trauma of losing breasts and their hair and putting on weight and losing weight and, you know, losing fertility and all those sorts of things. But then they fronted up to do something that is so very unique. Body painting isn't something that everybody has even ever seen, let alone experienced personally. So for us to be able to create this kind of movement where we've got a whole bunch of women from across the country who've been able to participate in this, even when we see other young women who are just at the beginning of their diagnosis, they see this and it gives them hope. There was one lady in particular who on her very first day of chemotherapy was given one of our previous calendars by her breast care nurse. And she said the day was completely gray and then I was given color because all of these women showed me that they got through. So I felt that I could get through too. And I mean, that kind of motivates us to keep going because we know that there will be another generation of girls next, like people getting diagnosed with this every single day of the year. And so we need to be able to think about those women who are at the very beginning of their journeys, who are looking to find support and looking to find the other people. And yeah, I think that connection as well. A lot of young women don't know another young woman who's got breast cancer. It's very isolating being in a chemo ward where you're probably the youngest by 20 or 30 years, or you go to a support group and the same sort of thing. You're talking with grandmothers and women whose families have already grown up, and you're talking about your daycare problems or your little children problems and, you know, all of the other things that you've got to deal with that perhaps a very different life experience and life stage. So having that connection with other women who are able to sort of talk about, oh, the loss of fertility, for example, or relationships and sexuality and some of those other things that probably, you know, we don't really consider when we're thinking about breast cancer, but it's the broader impact that it has on these women's lives. So having that connection is really important.
So where can we find you? Where can we find So Brave?
Okay, so our website, sobrave.org.au, and we're on Instagram and Facebook at So Brave Official. And yeah, contact us, reach out. We always like and a share. And at the moment, we've just launched our 2022 calendar. So yeah, if you haven't bought your calendar for this year, or if you know some people in your life that might benefit from some breast awareness and breast tips and some inspiration from these young women, then please do go and buy lots and lots of copies.
Great. Check it out, both your breasts and all of the So Brave profiles. Thank you so much, Rochelle.
Woo! Oh gosh, thanks guys. That was amazing.
Thank you. So our second guest today is a model and body love activist who's finally decided to take the advice of people who said you could be a model if you lost weight, but only take half that advice, you could be a model, and is just doing it anyway, recently becoming the star of Australia's first bikini billboard with a fat model. Please welcome April Helene Horton. Woo!
Hi. Hello.
So April, hi. You were Australia's first bikini billboard model who is fat. Can yes. you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was something that came about after I did a little Insta video of me wearing a swimsuit from a brand called Curvy Swim. Marsha from Curvy Swim reached out to me and said, we want to do this campaign and we'd love to have you. You seem really confident, which we know can sometimes be code for, surprisingly, you don't seem to hate yourself because you're fat, which I don't, hooray. And so Marsha wanted to know if I wanted to be part of this campaign. And so Jez Smith, who you might know as one of the judges from Australia's Next Top Model, he's also a photographer who's worked with lots of high-profile people, and he's really, you know, he's spoken out quite a lot about how misogyny and beauty standards are harming women in the industry. And so he came on board with the project and so took my photo. I was wearing a lilac velvet bikini that was very small.
Velvet?
So small. The smallest bikini that ever was. And I was on Cronulla Beach. For Australian listeners, they'll be like, wow, that is intense. And yes, it was. It was the first day that the beach was open after a Christmas time lockdown too. So people were swarming the joint. There was people with, I don't know, canoes or whatever it is, kayaks, I don't know, you know, surf life-saving practice and I don't know, nippers, the whole bit. And I was there in my tiny bikini and this huge setup, cameras, lights, film crew, because we're also filming for a TV show. And yeah, it was the time, but it was amazing. And the billboard, when I actually saw it for the first time in my entire life, I was actually speechless. So.
Wow.
Wow. Did you find yourself driving around and around past the billboard again and again? Because that's what I would do.
Oh, I wish I could. The billboard was in Melbourne and I live in New South Wales. So I got to see it for the big reveal. And then I was lucky to get lots of photographs from friends, most of whom were like, I just pulled over to take this photo. So there was quite a lot of, I was getting a lot of those messages that were like, look what I just saw. So it was definitely out there. It was being seen. So that was cool. It was across Australia. So it was really cool.
This is a real I'm a feminist butt, but I'm a feminist butt. I'm concerned about how practical a velvet bikini is.
Yes, I'm also on board with that.
Could we just discuss the velvet element?
You know when someone gives you an ornamental hand towel and when you wet it, the water just runs straight off? It's kind of like that. So not absorbent as such on the outside, but then the inside's wet. So the outside's dry, the inside's wet. So when I was, because obviously I only wore it for the photo shoot, it's not really my usual type of getup. And I agree, it's not the best for swimming. I imagined it would soon be zero bikini. I'd need to go to a nudist beach just to be safe. And yeah, when the bottom half of it was wet, it was like, it looked soggy. I mean, it felt soggy, but it looked fine. So everyone was like, hey, yeah, you look great. I was like, yes, I am very moist and not in a good way.
Well, it sounds like a modelling bikini more than a swimming bikini. It's not something you'd wear to the public pool to do laps in. No. But that's definitely not the point of this. It was just something that I was in my mind and I thought might be in the mind of the listeners. So I thought I'd address it straight up. I know that when I was being raised in Australia in a beach town, how much the forces of thinness were at work. And I was never thin. I always felt I had to hide a bit at the beach because there was one sort of body that was celebrated and it was the thinnest possible body. How much do you think Australia has changed with the body positive movement and the fat liberation movement? Do you feel there is a different sort of acceptance? Because I think the body that's broadly celebrated around the world now, like big butts have come in, like there's no question about that, like around the world big parts have come in. Do you think Australia has moved with that, or do you think it's still in this place of the smallest possible body on the beach is the most celebrated body?
I think definitely some parts of Australia have moved forward, but like with racism, we're super behind in lots of other places. So I think in your more metropolitan areas where there's a higher propensity of diversity, there are going to be lots of pockets of places where people are like, wear what you want, do what you want, be what you want, et cetera. There are also going to be those little niches of places where people are like, you can only do what's familiar to me, otherwise you can get out of here. And I grew up in a regional town, in fact, first inland city, so nowhere near a beach. So this wasn't necessarily so much of a problem for me growing up. But as a, you know, I remember having to do swim lessons for PE and putting on a swimsuit, and I know what you mean. And I was a fat kid. Like I wasn't I feel big compared to very slim children. I was a fat kid and I felt horribly self-conscious, and it was, and for good reason, because everybody in my class was like, it was that literal like record scratch, walk out, dead silence, everybody turns their head to look at you. All I was doing was walking along, but because you're a spectacle, that's just how it is. So I think in terms of do I think my child will go to school and that behavior will continue? Yes, I do, but at a much lower degree and probably get called out more often. Like, hey, man, you can't talk like that. I definitely think back in the day, nobody was stopping anyone from being mean to fat kids. And I think that has changed. Will they stop being mean? No. But will people be like, oi, cut it out? Yes. I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you think campaigns like this make a difference? Do you think the fact that there is a beautiful, fat woman of colour, sometimes I've been told I'm not supposed to say woman of colour for an individual woman. I meant to say black woman or like women of colour, sure, because you're saying, oh, this is an issue for women of colour. But one woman is like an Indigenous woman or a black woman or a brown woman.
Well, I'm a brown woman, but okay. I am totally okay with being called a woman of colour. I like acronyms, so, you know, I'm all about WOC. I don't necessarily call myself a WOC because that could confuse me with a piece of kitchenware, but I definitely would say I was a woman of colour but also a brown woman. I am feeling very brown today with this very cute bronzer look that I've got on. So, yes, I am, I think, in terms of, that diversity piece, I think seeing a fat woman of colour, so someone who's different from people in lots of different ways, that intersectional kind of thing of even if you're thin but you're brown or you're fat but you're white, you're still seeing yourself reflected somewhere in that. Do I think these campaigns are making a difference? Yes, I definitely do. I get feedback from people that say, I went out and bought a bikini today because I saw that you did that. So from my point of view, I'm getting that. And for all of the negative comments and there weren't that many or messages or things that I got 25 good ones. So I definitely think the impact that it's having far outweighs. And that's probably a little bit about the fact that I don't read the comments. Do you know what I mean? If I know, I'm not going to go to the Today Show and read the comments because we know what I'm going to find there. Men named Warren being like, oh, this can't be healthy. Nobody asked you, Warren, shut up. And that's actually a real life story. But when I was recording,
it sounded very specific.
Oddly specific. I also recorded for SBS Australia. I recorded as part of an episode that they actually asked the question, "What does Australia really think about obesity?" And they aired that about a month ago. And the feedback again that I got from that was overwhelmingly positive. But when we were filming, they were like, can we get you to just go and read some Facebook comments? Like, just because that's what you do when you're filming a TV show. You want to get the good side and the bad side. And they were, I think, surprised that I was just like, oh, shut up. Like every comment I read, I think they were waiting for me to be upset. And I was just like, right. Oh, I don't care what old blokes think. I didn't care yesterday. I don't care today because I can read it on Facebook.
So they got you to read mean tweets about this?
Essentially, yeah. Wow. But Jimmy Kimmel wasn't there.
So yeah, that seems the thing is with mean tweets, the reason that works is it's very glamorous celebrated celebrities who are only hear good things about themselves and have won Oscars going, oh, you know, Brad Pitt should just shut up. I don't find him sexy or what, you know, whatever. But
and
he's
Brad Pitt's
usually
like, oh, well, I know that a million people disagree, so I feel fine about it.
Exactly. So that's the joke of that is seeing someone who's only ever praised and has beauty and glamour projected upon them by society read something from one individual who dissents. I don't know that it's okay to say to somebody who has lived a life of being in a marginalized group that gets a lot of hate and gets a lot of heckling and abuse on a daily basis, read out that abuse or those really nasty opinions. I'm sorry they made you do that. And I am really amazed that you were able to do it in a way that felt very Teflon, where you were like, nah, I'm going to shrug it off.
Well, I did say when we were filming, because of course it's very like, and how does that make you feel? And I said, well, old mate could have written, you're a turtle. And I'd be like, no, I'm not. So if he writes, you're less valuable to society than me because you're fat, I'm like, no, I'm not. So I just am like, they're not facts, Warren. You don't know what you're talking about. Bloody Warren. Better not cross me. If I see him on the street, I'll give him a smack in the mouth.
So Warren, if you're listening, and I know that you're not, you take it all on board, take it all on board. But it's really interesting. You seem to have really internalized. I don't think I've internalized enough of this. Like rationally, I get it, but I don't think I've internalized enough of it that I could sit on Facebook. Sometimes the things people say, and I'm very lucky. I don't get a lot of hate stuff on Twitter, and if I do, it tends to be from, you know, somebody men. Just saying feminism is cancer or something like that, or you know, like it's something that's not really about me. Sometimes it's so risible, it's so extreme that I find it funny because so it's really extreme. Like somebody once said, underneath what I think of as an extremely sexy picture of me, I can't read this article. I'm too distracted by her ugly face and her ugly body. And I was like, wow, if you think this is an ugly face and ugly body, you should see me in real life because this is one of the best pictures of me ever taken. And I look smoking. So I found it because I just thought that's just a person putting out, you know, fury into the world. It's nothing to do with me.
It's not a happy person that loves everything except your ugly face and your ugly whatever.
But if somebody said to you, oh, is that what you're wearing? You'd be like, sorry, something wrong with this? Like if someone wants to go
exactly
out vitriol, you're like, shut up. But if they just simply went, oh, hair, different, looks different, you're like, but does it look nice? Suddenly you're in a spiral. And I feel like, yeah, I get you.
I stopped reading comments about myself years ago, just after I'd had my son, because I stumbled across, in my little vanity search, I stumbled across a conversation between a bunch of men discussing how they hoped I kept breastfeeding because it made my tits look amazing while I was on a panel show.
Foul.
Isn't it? It just made me go, that's enough of the comments forever.
Unsubscribing from the internet.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, that's foul.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you do have to wonder what's going on with men when they say things like that. Like, do they not understand that even if they did think that, they could keep that to themselves?
Yeah, that's like,
and other people can read it.
Yeah, they could not put that on the internet. They could realize how awful that thought was and not put that on the internet for the woman in question to read, knowing risk.
I mean, maybe they wanted me to read it. Maybe, I mean, the worst part would be if I looked down and it was my husband's name on the comment. It wasn't, though, because he's a lovely human. But
he might have a dummy account, though.
Hasn't everyone got a burner these days?
Was that your husband's Instagram? I follow him on that. He has said to me a couple of times, just by the DMs, would you encourage Cal to have another baby? I'm not really interested in more children, but I am interested in those breasts coming back.
The irony of the whole thing is that they were very unevenly sized. I was calling it the Uber boob because it was quite large. The other one was quite small. And whenever I did a TV appearance, I would have to stick shoulder pads down one side so that I looked evenly balanced. So I feel that the magic would have been stolen from those guys if they'd known that.
You'd be surprised. There'll be some people who are super into that. And now you've said that, those men will go back and watch. They probably listen to, they're Uber fans of yours, and they listen to absolutely everything you do. So they're listening to this now and they're like, she read my comment. One boob bigger than the other. Excellent. And they're going back to find that very thing.
They're the same people who are sending you peg recommendations. I'm going to assume that they're also now sharing.
Imagine some awful old misogynist, but who really agrees about pegs. Like, it's just look, I can't stand what she stands for, but she's a good peg. You can't go past one.
I think they're thinking of them as nipple clamps. They're sending
them
to you.
That's not what I was thinking of when I tagged you and Julia Gillard in those comments, Cal.
So
I just really
say,
wanted you to see the ad about the peg.
So you say, April, can you prove it? No, I don't think you can.
There's
I don't
no
think
receipts.
You can. What was your personal journey? If you were a kid coming out, you know, and people were staring at you and teasing you and making your life difficult as a kid. And how did you get to the place where you could stand on a crowded beach with a small velvet bikini under lights and feel really glorious about yourself, love seeing yourself on a billboard, just find the Warrens of the world as risible? How did you get there?
After I had my son, I definitely went through kind of a period of looking at what I was contributing and what what was I actually doing with my life, you know, from, you know, that real existential crisis that you get in the middle of the night while you're breastfeeding. But, you know, prior to that, I had been in, you know, some really terrible situations. I had a former friend who was really, now when I reflect, quite negative and sort of fatphobic, a former relationship where that person said to me after we got engaged, we can't get married until you weigh certain number.
What?
Like, why? What? Yeah.
Cut this back. You were engaged to someone who said, we can't get married until your weight is at a certain number.
And then the next day I dumped him. So, like, it's a good story, really.
Well, you lost weight, but it was just all him.
Yeah. Exactly. I subscribed. The internalized fat phobia that I had up until the point that I didn't anymore, the things – like I have said, and I'm sure that I said that in the context of the billboard and the bikini shoot, was nobody can say anything to me that's meaner than something I've said to myself, which is a sad truth that I think most people relate to. Mm-hmm. And I think I had surgery as part of then the sort of progress after leaving that hideous relationship. I had surgery, I lost weight, not something I either recommend for or against. It's just something that happened. It's part of the story. Wouldn't be here today talking to you two glorious humans if I hadn't done that. So that's fine. But what I realized after doing that, I really noticed the way that people treated me differently when I was significantly smaller. Mm. I was like, that is so gross. I liked it. I'm a feminist, but I liked it. But it's still gross. And I realized this more and more as I reflected, and as I said, a lot of that happened after I had my son, and I thought, is my son going to be one of those people that acts differently towards fat people? No, we're not about that. And then I started following people on Instagram who, you know, I can't even think of the first person I saw who I went, oh my God, like I relate to that, or I feel something about that. But it was just the slowly clawing my way out of that hole of thinking you're this or you're that because of your body, because other people were sharing, you know, what they were doing. And I think because I am someone who's naturally optimistic, like I'm, a happy person. I was just the funny fat friend, and now I'm the funny fat friend who's like, yeah, like whatever, being fat, I don't care. So, you know, it's something that it just sort of happened. But then when I started to notice it, then I became more vocal about it. That's how I kind of came to be really talking about it a lot online and being really focused on it and wanting to be a part of the movement that's going to change the way that people talk about themselves and then, of course, each other.
Do you think that it's still a battle because society keeps projecting stuff at you? Or do you think that people have changed the way they perceive you now because you've changed the way you've perceived yourself in your head and you refuse to be under those same power structures?
I think it's definitely the latter for the most part. But I also see that when other campaigns and other things happen where I say, oh, I see myself there, or they can do it, I can do it. You know, there is that element of you can't be what you can't see. So the more that we bring diverse bodies into the mainstream, everybody gets that chance to be like, well, why can't I do that? But I certainly think it's the latter in terms of it's almost as if when people are like, oh, this is, you know, I'm this or that because I'm fat, or however they refer themselves, I'm plus size, I'm curvy or whatever, and they feel a certain way about their value and their contribution and whether they're morally a good person. I just listen to that as if to be like, oh, you obviously haven't had those lessons yet. Like, you know, the same way that you're a year 11 student and you listen to year 7s talking about science or maths and you're like, oh, you'll learn. You just don't know yet. So I think it's just a growth of being determined to focus and choose to only take in things that add to what I already believe. But I suppose it's a lot about curating what I'm seeing online, not spending time feeling bad about myself because I'm looking at all the different bodies that are out there that might make me feel less than. That's definitely part of it. And yeah, I think it's just part of my personality to be kind of like, no, I don't know, like you guys are making out like I'm not cool, but I'm not sure I agree.
It's such a powerful thing, I think, because I was thinking about this today, knowing that we were going to be chatting. It's such a powerful thing to love yourself and be open about that. And like you were saying before about, you know, the no one can say anything to you that is as bad as the stuff you've said to yourself. Like I totally relate to that in terms of like, you know, I'm 51 and my body has changed from what it was. And I've really struggled with that because I'm just not who I've always thought I was. Like my, it's like when I cut my hair. I used to have really long hair, and I cut it. And for 3 years, I was a long-haired person with short hair. Before I just went, oh, I have short hair. Like mm-hmm. I still feel like I'm still. Part of me is telling myself I should be the same size I was when I was 30, and I'm just not. And it's still weird for me to go, oh, like I'm just, I'm different, and that's okay. Like it's still part of me going, oh, you don't look the way you did. Like it's so fascinating mm-hmm. to me that at 51 I'm still doing that to myself, that I'm still having to fight with myself to feel good about the way I look when, you know, I'm a feminist, but you'd think I would have sorted it out by now.
Well, you're not the same in your head as you were when you were 30. That's the thing. It would be weird if you looked identical, because you think of the growth that you've had mentally and emotionally and spiritually. I use spiritually to mean, you know, connection to the universe, whatever it is. You're not the same in those ways. So it would be weird if you looked exactly the same as you did when you were much younger and much less wise, maybe much less sure of yourself. I do sometimes. I'm a feminist, but I do sometimes get annoyed that confidence arrives just as collagen is leaving the building. I'm like, motherfucker, I have just found myself. What the fuck is this now? I'm like, is there any chance that confidence could have turned up while collagen was still around? It's like they tag team each other. It's like, you got this now. You got the confidence. You don't need the collagen. The collagen was there because you didn't have the confidence. I'm like, you motherfucker, not a feminist term, but seriously, you little tag team motherfuckers, I'm not okay with it. And I get it when my mum has said to me that sometimes she'll see herself in a shop window or something and think, oh, who's that old lady? And she'll go, oh, it's me. But that's not what I look like. Because for most of your life, you don't look elderly. Most of your life, your face pretty much looks like your face, some version of it. And if I look at pictures of me now when I was 20, it's sort of, it's, you know, I still look like me. I will be going, oh, what's that line there? Or that's not as high as it was or whatever. But most people would just say, yeah, that's still Deb. And then at some point you start to look elderly and your face does look very different. You know, I always try and imagine what elderly people looked like when they were 20, because I was trying to see the 20-year-old inside of them, because I know that they still feel 20 or 25 or 30, or, you know, people have an age that they still feel. So I do understand that desire to just look like yourself and go, no, it's not, I don't recognize that person. I think there is something about identity, cutting your hair and going, I'm not myself anymore. I do absolutely get that. But I think the way I'm trying to see it is I'm not the same on the inside. Mm. I'm much healthier on the inside, I hope. So it's okay to look different on the outside. April, you're wearing a jumper yeah. that says The Bodzilla. Please explain.
Oh, that's me. That's what I call myself on Instagram. When I first started talking about body positivity and the experiences around being a fat person on Instagram, someone I knew said to me, I really love all that stuff that you're sharing. You should do that. You should, you know, and it, of course, the end of 2019 is when we were all deciding that we were going to have the best year ever in 2020 and we were going to grab hold of those passion projects and really make a new thing. And I don't know what we were thinking. But anyway, I changed my Instagram name to The Bodzilla. So that's me. Usually in places where you look for me online, and it's kind of cool because there's a sort of power behind it. It's a very sort of the onomatopoeia behind a word like Bodzilla. Like it makes you feel like which, you know, probably sounds much weirder when you can't see me, you can only hear what I'm saying. It's much better experience for you, Cal, because you can see me during this recording. But I have made that my moniker. I've adopted that as my thing. Part of that is, I suppose, also too, that in my real life, although I am this body positive, you know, fat liberation, body acceptance, self-love, all of that person, I am still just a person. I guess the Bodzilla is my very, very obvious, I'm a feminist, but in my real life, you know what I mean? So I still am a person, and I still wake up some days and I'm like, Jesus, is this what I'm working with? Is this honestly the face that I've got today? Even though yesterday this face looked amazing, today tomorrow I might be like, oh, this is not, it's not my best. But that's where, I've gotten to the point where I go, oh, well, my face is not the most important part of this situation. Like, you know, I'm not going to my work For people to look at my face and make assessments of whether my face is good or not. And also you look totally different to other people than you do to yourself. So, which is proven anytime someone takes your photo and you're like, geez, is that what I look like? Whoa, okay.
Oh, it's the worst thing when you go, oh my God, that's an awful photo of me. And they go, no, it's a lovely photo of you. And then you're like, excuse me? If that's a lovely photo of me, are you saying that's how you see me and that's the best I can look? If somebody says that's a horrible photo of me, you must agree that is the only thing to do as a friend and a feminist. You go, yeah, that's not what you look like. That's a horrible photo of you. Even if you think it isn't, you must lie. It's very, very important. Never tell somebody that a photo they think is horrible is lovely. Never. It's cruel and it's wrong and I won't have it.
My 12-year-old son took a photo of me while I was asleep on the couch. I dozed off one afternoon, very unflattering photograph of me having a nap, and used it as my profile picture on his phone, and just loved it and thought it was the best thing ever. But we have discussed it. It is no longer the profile photo. Just a terrible, snory, very low angle,
that's
unflattering.
Not on. No.
I go, aww, like, because I feel like when my kid's 12 years old, he's not going to like me. So I, you know what I mean? He's going to be like, oh, shut up, mum. So I get excited about the idea that your kid might look at you and go, oh, look at mum. She's so peaceful. She's not talking. She's not nagging me to clean my room. I'm going to take
a photo. That's
probably
what he loves about it. Yeah.
And I think, Deborah, you said, you know, if I said that's a horrible photo of me, then you have to agree. I would be that person that would be like, no, it's not. I love how you look because I'm here and I can feel the feelings that I get when I look at that photo. But if you don't like how you look, then that's okay. We'll take another one. But also I'm the person that gets in the photo and they go, oh, do you want to, like, you remember when we used to do that thing where you'd turn your screen around and be like, do you want to check it? Like check that you're okay with this photo. I'm just like, I don't know, mate. It's what I look like. Like, post it. Like, am I naked? Is my tit out? No, I'm good.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, if not, let's go again.
Let's. Here we go.
April, I think we've established that you're a better feminist than me. Your loveliness of going, well, I love the energy of this, but if you don't like, you know, and I love you and I love the way you look in all photos, but if you don't like it, let's take it again. That is a much better response than my response, which was, how dare you? You are, you must agree with me. That's a much better response. And also, sure, you don't need to take it. I don't need to approve that photo. It's how I look. What a wonderful attitude, which I will never have. You're just better than me. But also, I don't know that I would have the wherewithal to do a bikini billboard either. And I love that you do, because actually, here's the interesting thing. I know that your bikini billboard, actually, I'm just going to look at it right now. Let me just have a look at it because I can find it online.
This is dangerously close to the weird situation that sometimes happens in a taxi where someone looks you up in front of you. Like,
oh, the worst.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Has that really happened?
I had that at the airport once, a guy that was booked to take me somewhere to a corporate gig. And once I'd gotten his car, he was like, I've just been watching you online. And I was like, that's not comfortable.
No. Just,
oh, wow. Yeah.
And then also to not say anything else about it, like not to be, you were funny or I just, I, like.
Now we follow it up?
Yeah. Something? Is there an element of a compliment in this?
It's really giving serial killer in the suburbs taxi driver vibes.
Oh, God. So I've looked up your picture and it is absolutely stunning. And your body, your energy, your face, it's just all completely glorious. So I know that when I look at you, that I see somebody who's completely beautiful and completely home with their body. And so it's a place I would like to get to. I'm certainly a lot further down the line than I used to be. I'm certainly a lot closer than I used to be. But I'd love to get to a point where I could do a bikini shoot and love what I see. I think your journey is one that I would like to take, because I think it's so clear to me how glorious that photo is.
Well, when the borders are open, you, me, Cal, whoever else wants to join us, beach, bikini, let's just do it. And then it's done.
It could be a challenge, couldn't it? We could do a guilty feminist challenge.
12 meters of purple velvet.
Yes.
And then we're going to have
a match.
We'll have a craft afternoon where we make the bikinis and then we go to the beach.
Oh, my God. Yes. And then we need like Cupid doll headwear. Like I'm 100% into this. Like you're laughing, but later I'm going to be like so DMing you. So like,
yeah, totally. Okay, all right. Can I, yes to all of this, But can I bring my own bikini? Because I think one stitched together by me when I'm the worst sewer in the world in purple velvet is not going to do for my confidence what you think it is.
I think a glue gun rather than a sewing machine. I'm going to glue mine.
It's literally going to fall apart while I'm wearing it on the beach. I just think this sounds like the most horrendous afternoon of my life. If I can bring my own bikini, I am up for a bikini shot on the beach.
I'll allow
it. I will put it up on the Guilty Feminist site and socials. Okay, all right. When we come to Australia next July, we're going to do a bikini shot.
It's going to be winter.
It's going to be winter. But we're going to do it anyway. We're going to do the winter blue bikini shot where we're all shivering on the beach, and we're going to invite other Guilty Feminists to come.
We should get into Lake Burley Griffin because it'll be, you know, there'll be a Canberra show. Yep. Lake Burley Griffin, get your bikinis.
With that beautiful fountain that looks like a fire hydrant has been damaged.
Yes. Was it going to be like the Friends opening with a fountain?
No, it's not a fountain. It's not as good as a fountain.
When it hasn't been your day, your week, your month.
Lake Burley Griffin.
Okay. Yes.
All right. It's putting out the light. Okay, I'm up for the bikini shot and we'll make a time.
Also, I'm just extrapolating this out. What about we have one show, and I'm just saying we as if I'm definitely going to be the co-host for that show. We have one show where you can only come if you're in a bikini.
That's all we've got time for, sadly, now. Thank
you're
you, Cal.
So underwhelmed.
I feel like some of our audience may say they find that exclusionary. And I would like to sell tickets. So, but what you could be a show where there's an option to come in a bikini. Clothes optional. I feel like here's the problem with announcing that. Mm-hmm. We are going to sell so many tickets to straight men who are not feminists.
Called Warren,
who are coming for the bikini show. All the Warrens are going to buy tickets. They're not going to be into feminism. They're not going to be listeners to the Guilty Feminists. They're just going to hear about this show where women are turning up in bikinis. And they're going to buy out half the venue. Ironically, they'll buy out the whole venue and there'll be no room for women in bikinis. It'll just be men called Warren in hoodies and Macs.
Oh, and footy shorts. Now it'll be winter. They'll be wearing normal clothes. They'll be wearing tracky dacks, Canterbury tracky dacks.
Nice. Well, oddly good workshopping, everyone.
Once again.
All right. I don't think this brainstorm is complete. Listeners, if you're listening.
It's a spin-off show. Yeah.
Start the group chat. Cal, over to you.
How about we do one episode of The Guilty Warren where only men called Warren can come, but only if they're in a bikini. This is a smaller venue is needed, I think. A six-seater of men in Australia called Warren willing
just
to come
Warren's
out.
Just Warren's house. Warren can just stay home.
It's just all Warrens should stay home, and if they want, wear a bikini. Done. Let's do that tonight. Warrens, stay home. You're in lockdown. You have to
stay at home. Orders for Warrens only.
Oh, that would be really funny if they let up the lockdown.
Nice
but
Warrens.
If they let up the lockdown,
yes,
but
I know a nice Warren. I feel bad.
So
for
do
him,
I.
I'm like, I can't help that the person that left the crappy comment was Warren, and I immediately latched onto that in my mind. It's not my fault. Not all Warrens, as they say.
Hashtag yes. Not all Warrens. Get that trending. Do you have anything to plug, April?
Well, yes, I do. I've recently released my own podcast. That's exciting. And because I'm called The Bodzilla, it's called The Bodcast. So season two.
Amazing.
I'm very excited. Part of the Acast Creator Network, not unlike some of my other favourite podcasts.
Yes, we're newly Acast. Yeah. So The Bodcast, B-O-D cast, and you can follow April at The Bodzilla. Is it The Bodzilla or at Bodzilla?
It's at The Bodzilla. You nailed it.
At The Bodzilla.
Good job.
Excellent. We will check out that podcast and we will also follow at The Bodzilla. Thank you so much, April. It's been wonderful
Thank
to have
you
on.
Thank you.
Cal, do you have anything to plug?
Deborah, I have started a podcast of stories for kids. It's called The Storyteller. And what I do is I get a word or a couple of words or a phrase or a name from a child and then I write a story using those words, and it's for times you're stuck in the car or it's time to go to bed or you just want something to occupy your kids. It's the thing I wish someone had done for me when my son was small. So it's called The Storyteller. It's very labor-intensive. I didn't think it through, but that is my new podcast.
Well, we look forward to listening to The Storyteller, and if you've got children, Cal Wilson's got a podcast now, Storyteller, you will love it. It will distract your children, and what greater feminist gift could she possibly give you? Cal Wilson, has been absolutely wonderful to have you on today. Thank you so much, Cal Wilson.
It's been amazing to see you from the shoulders up.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Cal Wilson, our very special guests, Rochelle Panitz and April Elaine Horton. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer was Tom Slitsky for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Kraftman, Gina DiCio, and everyone who made this happen, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Woo!
Was recommended Grace Petrie, and Tioni said, oh, you need to listen to The Guilty Feminist and you'll hear Grace Petrie. And so that episode with Grace Petrie was my first one. And
nice. Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. Aww, so when Tom sent out the email, I was like, oh, it's come full circle, but then Grace isn't here. So, oh, well, wait.
Grace couldn't do today. It's a shame.
On tour, how rude.
Yeah, but also on tour, why she's not got a gig at 10 o'clock in the morning. I mean, yeah. Get up early, Grace. I mean, her argument will be, oh, I didn't finish my last gig and get back to the hotel and stuff till 1 and have supper and stuff like that. Whatever, sure. But Grace, where's your commitment to feminism? That's what I would ask.
Exactly. Total, she's turned into a total, like, cliche of a musician, staying up all night, sleeping all day, not caring about the people.
She's a rock star now. She sings a lot of feminist songs, but really, in what way is that feminism evident if she can't
get out
of
bed? She's a feminist, but she won't get up early in the morning to do the bloody shoes.
Criminal refugees,
Kanye survivors,
rape survivors.
The biggest stars of our headlines are people we rarely actually hear from.
Some communities don't get right of reply, and that's just bad journalism.
With the mainstream media pushing the same old narratives,
what effect does that have on minority groups?
From the House of the Guilty Feminist, we bring you an investigative podcast that starts with the people who are normally asked last.
We invite people with lived experience to speak for themselves and roast the headlines that love to roast them.
I'm Matilda Mallinson.
And I'm Helena Woodier.
And this is Media Storm.
I don't see many women of colour getting justice.
All they tell me is what's wrong with them. I don't know any different.
What the government did and didn't do shows such a severe neglect to the criminal point.
Your avoidance of the conversation is part of the silence.
I don't know how you, with your eyes, tell someone, like, I'm about to go be murdered.
I'm not idiot to cross the channel while I know it's dangerous. I know it's dangerous.
This time they shot at you, maybe next time they attacked you.
They sold me. And I will kill myself on the wedding day.
The damage that was done to my body isn't reversible.
I've struggled to get officers to speak on the record about what goes on in prison.
We're literally not allowed to.
Advocates do not need to be a voice for the voiceless. Survivors have our voice. We are empowered. We are magic.
Stop the gatekeeping. Stop censoring people.
You don't have a single agent on your entire news.
And if you can't find them, you're not doing your fucking job well.
You know, it's so ridiculous. It's like, hey, UK public, should we piss in the sea? Should we put pineapple on pizza? Should we arrange mass deportation flights so as to deny people their full legal rights?
That might make it less appealing for refugees to cross the channel.
Hear our stories. We are the ones who have lived this. Our lived experience is leadership. We are the experts.
It's really simple. Just present both sides of the story.
Follow Media Storm wherever you get your podcasts so that you can access new episodes as soon as they drop. You can also follow us on social media at Matilda Mal and at Helena Woodier, and follow the show via at Media Storm Pod. Media Storm, a new podcast from the House of the Guilty Feminist, is part of the Acast Creator Network. It is produced by Tom Selinsky and Deborah Frances White. The music is by Samphire.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.